And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Positive heads out there, it's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality in a way that is extremely empowering. Speaking of exploring powerful perspectives, I would like to gift my book, The Golden Key, Modern Alchemy to Unlock Infinite Abundance, to you at goldenkey.gift, where you can get the audio or ebook as my gift to you by using the code POSITIVEHEAD at checkout. All right, all you positive heads, welcome. Here we go again. It is a fabulous Friday in the studio, but not the one you're hearing me talk, or that this came out, rather. It's the Friday before. I'm recording a few episodes ahead because I am heading into the dust at in Black Rock City, Nevada for Burning Man. So, yeah. Excited to get out there and explore all the things that it has to offer. First time in many years since Sanction burned, anyway, since COVID. So should be good. I'm sure some of you listening are out there, or been out there, or just got back when you're hearing this. Yeah, it's definitely a journey. If you're not familiar, look it up. Look up some videos and stuff on YouTube. Most people listening to the show probably are, though. So what am I going to talk about today? Well, I am going to talk about the destiny of souls, new case studies of life between lives, the book which Michael Newton, PhD, wrote. He wrote this in Journey of Souls, and I've been reading from it here and there sporadically for quite some time, just when I feel like reading. And it's just such a fascinating account. You know, for those who haven't heard or don't know the book, he was a hypnotherapist for like more than 40 years, just taking people into past life memories via hypnosis. And then when they passed away in that life, he would get from them, okay, now what? What happens to you now? Well, and what's fascinating is very scientific in his approach. He documented over these decades all people's accounts and kind of what they reported, and found a lot of similarities, and kind of started to get the structure of how things are put together, organized on the other side, who we are, what we remember, what we're doing, the bigger narrative to which this life is only a small part of a much bigger story that you are currently engaged in that you don't recall. So, great, great insights and wisdom to, you know, you can go back and search Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls on positivehead.com if you want to hear some of the other readings or get the books, of course. But I'm going to just pick up kind of where I left off last time a few weeks ago. And it's titled, this section, Spiritual Duality. It's going to then go into a case where someone's under hypnosis, and I'll sort of inflect my voice to let you know when it's the doctor. He's normally asking a question and then they're answering, you know, under hypnosis. So, but this first little bit is just him talking. Some years ago, a magazine article recounted the travels of an American woman who was driving through the English countryside and felt inexplicably drawn to a small side road away from her intended destination. Soon she came to a deserted old manor house. The woman was told by the caretaker The house was haunted by a ghost who looked very much like her. Walking around the ground, she felt an eerie connection to something. Presumably, she was there to help release herself. Oh, wow. Okay, so I think this is from the last reading that I did. It's like an ongoing. I'll continue reading to find out. The two portions of her soul could have been drawn to each other in the same mysterious way that two people living parallel lives with one soul might be if there was a compelling purpose. In chapter one, I touched upon the duality of souls and how they are able to divide their energy to live more than one life at a time. A portion of the energy of most souls never leaves the spirit world during their incarnations. I'll discuss soul division further in the next chapter, but splitting soul energy is particularly relevant to the study of ghosts. In my last case, even though Elizabeth was in limbo for a while as a ghost, another part of her energy remained in the spirit world working on lessons and interacting with other souls. That other portion may also incarnate again and move on to a new life, which is what I believe happened with the woman who found the haunted house. I disagree with some ghost authorities who state that ghostly forms only represent an earthly shell without a soul's core of consciousness. There are life cycles when souls choose to take less energy than they should into a human body. However, even if they become ghosts, such souls are far more than an empty shell of energy. One would think that the balance of a ghost energy remaining in the spirit world ought to be more helpful to their disturbed alter ego still hanging around Earth. From what I hear, most immature souls who cross over are unable to perform this transfer and integration of energy by themselves. The following excerpt is a report I received from the soulmate of a ghost. This ghost is a young level one soul who is my subject's first husband. Wow, this is interesting because it's like this woman. Okay, it's about to go into the case reading, but it reminds me of my ex-partner having a past life regression experience where she's sort of, her current self was sort of like a ghost following her past self from like the 1500s. And then when her past self passed away in that past life regression, she actually assisted her past self in crossing over. So it was a really wild experience for her. But anyway, moving on. Here's the case. Here's the doctor talking. You have told me that your first husband, Bob, was a ghost after his last life. Please explain the circumstances here. Bob became a ghost because he was killed early in our marriage in that life. He was so overcome with despair and concern for me, he wouldn't leave. I see. Can you tell me approximately how much of his total energy he carried with him into that life? Nods her head in assent. Bob had only about a quarter of his energy, and it was not enough for him in this mental crisis. He misjudged. Do you think that if Bob had taken more of his energy to allow for this contingency, he might not have become a ghost? Oh, I can't answer that, but I think it would have made him stronger, more resistant to sorrow. Then why did he take so little energy to Earth? Well, because he wanted to be more engaged with his work in the spirit world. I'm confused about why Bob's guide didn't just make him take more energy to Earth. Shakes her head negatively. No, we are not pushed around that way. We are free to make our choices. And Bob didn't have to become a ghost, you know. Bob was advised to take more, but he is stubborn, and he was also considering another life at the same time, a parallel life. Let me make sure I understand. Bob underestimated his capacity to function more normally in a crisis with a body having only 25% of his energy capacity? Sadly, I'm afraid so. Even though in death, that body was gone, it didn't matter. The effects were still with him, and he didn't have enough strength to combat the circumstances. How long did Bob stay a ghost before the rest of his energy was restored to him in the spirit world? Not long, about 30 years. He couldn't seem to help himself. Lack of experience, part of his lesson. Then our teacher was called by, you know, those beings who patrol Earth watching over the disturbed ones, to go get the rest of him to come home. They have been called the Redeemers of Lost Souls by some people. That's a good name for them. Only Bob's soul wasn't lost exactly, only tormented. He goes on to say, my next case involves a more advanced subject who provided me with details about entities who are not ghosts but won't go home after death. As the case unfolds, we will see that there are two motivating factors that drives these types of souls into seclusion. Case 16. Are there people who die who are not ready to return to the spirit world? Yes. Some souls who are released from their physical bodies don't want to leave Earth. I suppose they're all ghosts? No, but they can be if that is their desire. Most are not. They simply don't want to be in contact with anyone. And their spiritual energy does not go home right after death? That's right, except there is a part of their energy which never left the spirit world. So I have heard. But let me ask you, if you consider these secluded souls as short-timers, or do they stay in limbo for a long time in Earth years? It varies. Some want to return as quickly as possible in a new body. Those souls don't want to give up their physical form for any length of time. They are different from most of us who want to rest and go home to study. Many of this type have been real frontline warriors on Earth. They want to maintain a continuity with their physical life. Well, it's my understanding that our guides won't permit us to be in some kind of holding pattern near Earth and go right into a new life. Don't these souls know they must go through the normal process of returning back to their groups, receiving counseling, studying their lessons, and taking some part in the selection of a new body? Laughs. You're right, but the guides don't force those in extreme distress to return home until they see the benefits of doing so. Yes, but they won't give them a new body right away until after some sort of period of readjustment? Yes, that's true. Is it also true that other disturbed souls don't want to go back to Earth and won't go back where they belong in the spirit world either? That's right, another type. But if both soul types don't prowl around Earth as discarnates bothering people as ghosts, should I be calling them disturbed when all they want is to be left alone? They are divergent. Their actions are the result of something unfinished, traumatic, overwhelming. They are unwilling to let go of this go, and this conduct is not usual. They won't talk to their teachers because of the extent of their unhappiness. Why don't their guides just take charge and pull them up deeper into the spirit world despite this resistance? If souls were forced to do what is right for them, they would learn nothing from getting into a funk and shutting themselves up from everyone. Okay, but I still wonder why the souls who want to come back right away will not stop over in the spirit world, can't just be given a new body immediately. Can't you see that placing a disturbed soul into a new body would be totally unfair to a baby just starting life? These souls have a right to be in seclusion, but they will eventually make the decision to ask for assistance. They must come to the conclusion they can't progress alone. Being given a new body won't help them. Where do the souls go who don't want to wander the earth as ghosts, but won't go home? It's any space they want to create for themselves. They design their own reality with memories of a physical life. Some souls live in a nice place like a garden setting. Others, those who have harmed people, for instance, design terrible spaces for themselves like a prison, a room with no windows. In these spaces, they box themselves in so they can't experience much light or make contact with anyone. It is self-imposed punishment. I have heard that disturbed souls, the ones associated with evil, are taken into seclusion in the spirit world. That's correct, but at least they are ready to face the music and have their energy healed properly with love and care. Can you give me some indication of how our guides deal with all types of souls in self-imposed exile? They give them time to sweat it out. This is a challenge for teachers. They know these souls are concerned about their evaluations and the reactions from their soul groups. They are full of negative energy and not thinking clearly. It may take many reassurances by those who wish to help them before these souls agree to give up their self-imposed places of confinement. Before we continue on with today's episode, I'd like to take a quick moment to tell you about our sponsor, Talkspace. When it comes to therapy, getting the help you need has never been so simple. Talkspace is like having a therapist in your pocket because you're able to access them from the comfort of your device via audio, video, or text 24/7. Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform and has thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties. I believe it is important, if you're struggling, to realize it's okay to seek therapy. And this is the simplest way I know of to do it. And it's for a fraction of the cost of in-house therapy. Once you join, you can speak with someone that same day. You'll set goals with your therapist, and they hold you accountable and make sure you're really progressing. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code POSITIVE to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's POSITIVE at Talkspace.com. I assume there are as many techniques of persuasion as there are guides. Sure, depending upon the range of skill, some teachers will not go near a disturbed student until that soul is so sick of being in seclusion, they voluntarily call for help. This can take quite a while. Other teachers drop in often for chats. Eventually, will all these disturbed souls release themselves? Let's put it this way. Eventually, all will be released one way or another through different forms of encouragement or persuasion with laughs. Those of you who are familiar with my work know that I have a strong convictions about the influence soul memory has on human thought. The isolation and solitude of souls expressed in Case 16 might well give one the impression of a Christian purgatory as a place of atonement. Could this religious concept have sprung from the fragmented soul memories of seclusion in the spirit world only to be subverted to earth? There are similarities and great differences between my findings about soul seclusion and purgatory as defined by the church. Christian doctrine has purgatory as a state of self-purification for those who must eliminate all traces of sin before proceeding on to heaven. I hear that some souls in seclusion undergo self-cleansing while others may require energy restoration. However, we don't come out of seclusion totally purified, or there would be no need to reincarnate again. Also, soul confinement is not banishment. In recent years, the less conservative elements of the Christian church do not stress hell as much as in the past. Nevertheless, the church still rejects universalism, the belief that everyone goes to heaven. To them, souls who die in a state of unrepentant mortal sin bypass purgatory and descend into hell, where they suffer the punishments of eternal fire. To be eternally damned, according to the church, is a separation from God as opposed to those who are blessed. The Christian churches simply do not accept the concept that everything is forgivable in the afterlife. In my experience, all souls are repentant because they hold themselves accountable for their choices. From all I have heard, soul energy cannot be destroyed or made non-functional, but it can be reshaped and purified of earthly contamination. Souls who demand to be left in solitude after death on earth are not self-destructing. Rather, some feel isolation is necessary out of concern for contaminating other souls with negative energy. There are also souls who don't feel contaminated, but they are not ready to be consoled by anyone. The important thing to keep in mind is that souls have the ownership of their energy, and most ask their guides to be taken to the centers of healing and rejuvenation in the spirit world. These are therapeutic areas away from their soul groups where there is solitude and time for personal reflection. However, this is a form of directed therapy. The disturbed souls Case 16 talked about had not yet chosen to receive help. All my case histories indicate to me that after death, we have the right to refuse assistance from our spiritual masters for as long as we wish. I have been asked at lectures if the places of self-imposed exile are lower planes or lower worlds. I can't help but feel these ideas come from fear-based dogma. Perhaps it's a question of semantics. I think a better translation of this state is a self-imposed space, a vacuum of subjective reality designed by the soul who wants to be alone. Separated space, away from the soul's spiritual center, is one of its own making. I don't see these souls as being lost in some realm divided from the spirit world where others reside. The disjunction is mental. Souls of silence know they are immortal, but they feel impotent. Consider what they do in solitude without help. They relive their acts over and over again, playing back all the karmic implications of what they have done to others and what has been done to them in their last life. They have harmed others or been harmed by them. Quite often, I hear they feel victimized by events over which they had little control. They are sad and mad at the same time. They have no interaction with their soul groups. These souls suffer from self-recrimination and restricted insight. I must admit these conditions fall within some of the definitions of purgatory. Sartre said, "We have an imaginary self of the world with tendencies and desires and a real self." To this statement, I'd add that of William Blake. Perception of our true self may threaten emergence with that self. In their space, the souls of solitude have given up their imaginary self for a larger dose of self-flagellation. Solitude and quiet self-analysis is an important and normal aspect of soul life within the spirit world. The difference here is that these disturbed souls are not yet ready to seek relief from their torment by asking for help, moving forward and making changes. It's a good thing that these souls make up only a small fraction of the population of souls crossing over each day. All right, I think that's a good place for today. And yeah, makes a lot of sense to me. It's not, you know, an eternal sentence that one may experience, but if you're creating your own reality, you can choose to, you know, isolate yourself and feel bad about yourself and, you know, torture yourself in a sense, because we've all done that, right? In small doses. So you start talking in the framework of eternity, you know, no time, infinity. It's a long no time. So any and all things are possible. And what's great is you're in eternity right now as you hear these words. And so it's not, all of this isn't something to get too hung up on or think too much about or caught up, or certainly to tell a story to be worried about. Rather, in this moment, in this now, is where all your power resides. And what are you choosing to focus on? What story are you choosing to tell? What container are you creating for yourself in this now moment? And if you've got hope, and you, even if there's things you want to change, I'm sure there's many things you can look at to be grateful for. And that's the beautiful thing. By focusing on things to be grateful for, we see more things to be grateful for. That is the doorway to more of what you want. And you are empowered in this moment to create a container that is not a prison, but your own heaven, your private heaven. So congratulations on doing it. Apparently it isn't that easy, right? It's a lot what we are, but you're here for it. You're meant for it. And so much magic ahead. Thank you for tuning in. As always, I do have a song to leave you with. This is in honor of my brother sent me this one, actually. He said, you know, he hasn't went to Burning Man in many, many years. And he's like, every time I hear this song, it reminds me of the year that I went. The first year that I went, I think it was probably about 10 years ago now. It's a great track. We listened to it a lot that week. So it's Passion Pit is the artist, and the song is called Swimming in the Flood. Till next time, journey well. Also, before we cue up today's song, as a quick reminder, don't forget to download the Golden Key audio or ebook as my free gift to you at goldenkey.gift using the Golden Key code POSITIVEHEAD. And please, if you enjoy my gift, leave a positive review on Amazon so others can unlock their lives with the help of the Golden Key as well.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.